call the Senate Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee to order. Actually, in one sense, we ought to be calling three committees to order. I want to welcome Senator Metzger, who has Transportation and Economic Development, Senator Farioli, who has Water and Land Use. I guess we can just say we're all in order this morning, right?
Actually, we would have to gavel in, Mr. Chair, if you want to do that.
Do you want to do that?
I would like to do that.
All right. Do you want to hammer?
We'll call into order a subcommittee of the Land and Water, Senate Land and Water Committee, and
we'll call to order a subcommittee of the Senate Committee on Transportation and Economic Development.
Great. I guess we have just brought order out of chaos, haven't we? This morning, we're having an informational hearing from the Bonneville Power Administration on energy issues in Oregon. We want to get right down to work. As I understand it, Steve Wright, the administrator from Bonneville Power, is here in the room now. We'd just like to welcome him and invite him to come down front and make a presentation. We're certainly very happy to have you here this morning. We want to thank you for taking the time out of what I'm sure is a busy schedule to be with us this morning. Thank you very much for coming.
Does this work? Yes, it does. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I guess.
Chairman, yeah, really.
I'm not quite sure how to address the committee at this point, the committee. So, thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today and give you an update on what's going on at the regional level and from Bonneville Power Administration perspective. I think you know, but just to make sure that Bonneville is a federal agency that serves about 45% of the power supply of this region and provides about 75% of the high voltage transmission. So we clearly have a big impact on the electricity infrastructure of the region. I want to describe for you a couple of key thoughts today. First, our overall financial situation, which I think can best be described as crummy. That's a technical term, actually, that I've been working on for a number of years.
It's the actually the envy of the state of Oregon at this point.
Second, a little bit about, so describe in the financial situation, describe where we're going over the course of the next couple of years. Second, describe a little bit about a set of issues that have been described as post-2006. Our number of our contracts either run out or our rates run out at the end of fiscal year 2006. And so as we move into fiscal year 2007, there are questions about how we will allocate the benefits from the federal power system across the region. And third, I understand there's a memorial pending before the legislature that would address the question of value of benefits of this system being retained in the Northwest, and I would like to describe for you a little bit about what those values are and why we think it's important that those benefits be retained for the long term. So I'm hoping that will meet your needs. Let me just do a quick head check and see if it does, and of course we'll also be available for questions after going through that. On the financial situation, we are struggling with three fundamental financial problems: liquidity, net revenues, and access to capital. Liquidity in the sense of we, a few years ago, had as much as $800 million in financial reserves on our system. And I've brought one graph, which I'll just show you, and it shows you how our reserves have fallen in the last few years. We've lost, as of the end of the last fiscal year, about $600 million of that $800 million. And we are looking at a substantially below average water year this year. In fact, I brought a second picture, which I can show you, which is this is a precipitation map for the Columbia River Basin, the drainage area for our hydro system. 90% of the resources that we have are hydro resources that are located in the Columbia River Basin. Just to orient you to this graphic, yellow and orange are bad, green and blue are good. You'll find that there is no blue on this graphic. There is some green, and there's an awful lot of yellow, orange, and red. Basically, we're looking at right now a volume forecast that's about 75% of average, about 80 million acre-feet average, and is measured as the amount of stream flow that passes the Dalles Dam between January and July. Average is somewhere around 103 million acre-feet. Right now, the current forecast is around 80 million acre-feet. And the difference, that 23 million acre feet, basically a sort of a rule of thumb in today's market is every million acre feet is worth about $10 million to us. So we're down expected value basis somewhere $200 million from what we thought we were going to see this year. Now you compare that against the graphic I showed you a moment ago, which said that we have less than $200 million in financial reserves that we started the year with, and you can see why we're quite concerned about our financial position and quite concerned about liquidity issues. Liquidity is a challenge for us this year. We do have some tools available to us, which we will use in order to preserve liquidity, so we will not run out of money. We will keep paying the employees. They won't get laid off, and the system will continue to operate, and we'll buy power if we have to. But having said that, the tools that we are going to use this year are not tools that we would ordinarily use. It's probably similar to the experience that you're living through. We're using a lot of tools which are expensive tools to you, borrowing tools and other sorts of things which do have costs for the long term. And consequently, we are looking to make changes in both revenues and expenses to try to pull ourselves out of the hole that we're finding ourselves in. Second issue that we're confronted with is a net revenue problem. Our revenues and our expenses across this period, we have a five-year rate period, 2002 to 2006, and across that five-year rate period, we are currently looking at a gap between revenues and expenses of about $920 million, $300 million of which we lost in fiscal year 2002, and we're expecting losses, again, in the $200-plus million range this year. And we see continuing losses into the out years unless we make some changes, and consequently, we've been holding processes around the region starting last June describing this problem and describing the fact that we need, in particular, cost reductions on our system in order to be able to bring revenues and expenses into alignment. We have accomplished about $350 million of cost reduction so far. We started with a $1.2 billion problem, and so it's down to about a $900 million problem now. We have further that we need to go. We have proposed, as of I guess about a month ago, a 15% rate increase on our wholesale rates. But having said that, when we proposed it, we indicated to the region that we don't believe that we need to end up at that level of rate increase, that we can do better than a 15% rate increase. We need additional cost reductions. One of the interesting things about the Bonneville system is that the you find as the administrator that you have a fair amount of authority to enter into contracts to spend money, but once there, it takes the commitment of cost partners in order to exit. And so we have a whole it will take the collaborative efforts of a number of parties in order for us to be able to get the types of cost reductions that we are looking for in order to either minimize or even potentially avoid a rate increase come October 1. And we are in the midst of discussions with parties around the region about the types of actions that would be needed to be taken. Again, I suspect it's very similar to the situation that you're confronted with. There is no silver bullet here. There's no one big program that gets cut and it makes a rate increase go away. There are lots of little actions, and consequently, it's always difficult because folks see their piece of this pie as a relatively small piece and don't understand why it's important to make that contribution. And so trying to create this sense of the need for collaborative effort and also equity, that all the parties are moving forward together and all taking cuts is one of the biggest challenges that I think we're confronted with. The third piece that I want to describe to you is an access to capital issue. The Bonneville Power Administration as a federal agency does not have the authority to go to Wall Street to raise capital. We can only borrow money from the U.S. Treasury. The amount of money that we can borrow from Treasury is limited by law. We are bumping up against the ceilings for the amount of money that we can borrow. We did earlier this year, after a two-year effort and a tremendous amount of effort on the part of the Northwest Congressional delegation, achieve a $700 million increase in our borrowing authority. That has helped ameliorate what would have been a pending crisis that would have occurred even early next year. I don't want anyone to walk away with the impression that it solved our access to capital problem. Moreover, what you'll find is, and I would suspect that you've faced similar situations, when you're confronted with a liquidity, a net revenue, and an access to capital problem, people tend to come to us with solutions that solve one of those problems but make another one worse. And one of the solutions that tends to come to us a lot right now to solve the rates problem is, why don't you just borrow some money? And, of course, what that does is it not only pushes costs into the future, but it also limits our ability to make investments in capital improvements, which can provide benefits for the long run for ratepayers. So there's a couple of costs associated with borrowing. Having said that, we will probably use some borrowing tools to be able to get through this near-term problem. In fact, almost certainly we'll have to use some borrowing tools to address our liquidity issues. Having said all that, that's a fairly bleak picture that I provided to you. I actually remain reasonably optimistic that we're going to find a way through this. We have identified places where cost reductions can be achieved. I'm seeing parties coming to the table and being willing to address some of those critical issues. The only concern I've got is that we need to impart a sense of real urgency to all of those discussions, because October 1st may seem like a long way away, but it's not very far for us. And the discussions that need to take place, these are very complex issues, and they it will take a lot of work in order to be able to put in place the types of reductions that we need to be successful at putting in place. Let me turn now to post-2006. We are having a big debate about how you allocate benefits from the system post-2006. I think the critical issue for me is that we find a way to preserve the value of this, the benefits of the system for the long run. And you do that primarily by creating a sense of equity across the region. And the biggest challenge for us is finding a way to equitably allocate these benefits between a variety of different constituents groups. We have a region that's served about half by investor-owned utilities, about half by publicly owned utilities, and we have a large number of aluminum companies that take a lot of power from Bonneville. Trying to find out how you distribute these benefits across these three different parties, and at the same time meet our environmental obligations to fish and wildlife, investments in conservation and renewables, is a daunting challenge for us. But if we can work our way through this, I think what we will have done is something extremely important. If we can resolve these equity issues and find ways to enter into long-term contracts, then we will have captured the value of the system for the citizens of the region for the long term. What is that value of the system? It is huge. Despite the fact that we've had these large rate increases, there is still substantial value associated with the system. Again, we're a 90% hydro system, one nuclear power plant. The cost of power delivered off of the system, even if you include the environmental obligations, fish and wildlife, et cetera, is below $30 a megawatt hour. The price for new resources in the marketplace, particularly if they were comparable to the extremely high value types of products that are produced by this system, is in excess of $40 a megawatt hour. What is that worth to the region's citizens? Tens of billions of dollars net present value over the course of the next 20 years. It is a tremendous legacy that we have been willed, a great system that's been built. It's something that other regions don't have, because we have this indigenous resource and the hydro resource. And I think one of the greatest challenges for any Bonneville administrator is trying to preserve the value of the system for the long run. And that's one of the things that we're trying to keep our eye on as we move through this near-term crisis, which is that we don't mortgage our future in such a way that that we have lost the value of the system for future generations. Last thought I'd like to leave with you is just that I think that one of our challenges as policymakers in the electricity arena is that we have had large rate increases across this region. Not just the Bonneville Power Administration, but nearly every utility in this region has suffered large rate increases coming out of the droughts and the West Coast energy crisis of 2001. And it's easy to get caught up in the near-term issues associated with that. To some extent, we are working through a pig and a python problem of some fairly large costs that were created by the droughts and the West Coast energy crisis, and we can focus on managing those costs. I try to make sure that I at least allocate a portion of every one of my days to thinking about what we're going to do to make sure that what we leave behind for our successors is a better world than the one that we found currently. And the challenge there, I think, is we have a tremendous system in the Northwest that, again, is of high value. Preserving the value of that system for the long run is one of our major challenges. But a second major challenge for us is, if we're going to have economic growth in this region, you have to have electricity infrastructure. We have used up the low-cost hydro sites in this region. We are going to have to move to alternative resources, and those alternative resources are more costly than the low-cost hydro system. So we will have some rate increases on a going-forward basis to be able to address the cost of integrating new resources if we're going to have economic growth in this region. The challenge is to build an environment that will attract capital, because this is a hugely capital-intensive industry, attract capital and use it in a way that is the most cost-effective way possible, so that we are adding resources that will allow economic growth but keeping our rates as low as possible. That's where the real policy comes in, and that's where I think we will actually have the greatest impact, is the future that we'll set up for 5 to 10 years from now. with that, I'm open to your questions and thoughts, and if anyone has any advice, I'm also quite open to that as well.
Be careful for asking for advice from this group. You might regret that. Are there questions?
My best advice is start thinking like a farmer. You know, you got to plan the dust and the bends will bust. You got to have a little positive viewpoint of the world, I think. What would happen if, say, you had a storm that, like, went through Denver in the last week and that went a little bit farther north? Would that, how much of a gap do you have as far as your resources are concerned?
So those kinds of storms do make a difference. And, in fact, we've had an unbelievable March so far. March has been just incredibly wet and somewhat cold, too, across the basin. And we have seen almost a 5% increase in the estimates of snowpack just in the last 2 weeks. Having said that, we have an almost impossible way to go, to length of way to go to get to average for the remainder of this year.
It's not going
to
work out this year, that's what you're saying.
Yeah, it will take 40 days and 40 nights, so a miracle.
I'll only plant half of it in the dust then. one of the things that you were talking about, capacity, and one of the questions somebody asked me to ask you was on transmission lines. Like, do you have a clog or a problem, so like from John Day to the Bonneville or John Day to McNary, that type of thing? What's happening there?
So we have three types of problems with respect to transmission in this region. So we have not built high voltage transmission in this region since 1987, and I'm pleased to report to you that I signed a record of decision in January for the first new project, and in fact last Friday I signed a record of decision for the second new major project. The three major problems that we are addressing is, number one, congestion, where you just have too many megawatt hours trying to flow on an individual line. Second, reliability. We are overloading the system because we haven't put enough wires in the air, and we're actually bumping into reliability constraints now. And third, hookup for new generators, where you've got a new generator locating in a place where we don't have high voltage transmission. You've got to find a way to be able to first integrate that new generator, and then also, you're talking about large amounts of power, move that to load. We are seeking to solve two of those problems, and the third one, less clear how we're going to solve them. We proposed 700 miles of new 500 kV transmission to be built in the region. I've signed record of decisions for two of those projects. We have more that we are working on EISs now and hope to be able to move forward with, because I think transmission infrastructure is a key part of, again, building a sound foundation to allow our economy to grow in the long run. The projects that we're building will address both the reliability issues and the congested path issues. With respect to new generation, what we have said is we've adopted the policy that is the national policy, that new generation needs to, because we are now moving into a world where we have merchant generation bringing capital into the marketplace, and ratepayers are not taking risk with capital, that they need to bring capital for transmission as well. And one of the big concerns, I think, for anyone doing electricity policy these days is we have a complete meltdown with respect to access to capital because of the Enron debacle. And new generators are finding it difficult to get access to capital from Wall Street. And they have a similar problem both with respect to developing their generation and now our policies with respect to transmission. And we're going to have to work through that over the course of the next couple of years. And I can't tell you exactly how that's going to turn out today. Although I know that I'm hesitant to take more risk, both because we have limited access to capital and because I'm hesitant to take more risk for ratepayers given the amount of risk we've already taken on and how that's played out over the course of the last couple of years.
Okay, one more question. It seems like a couple years ago there was the discussion that when your bond indebtedness, the whoops indebtedness, goes away, that was 2015 or something like that. Has that been changed any? What would be the situation if you got rid of that indebtedness? And that adds a tremendous amount of value, I think, to the system, doesn't it?
It does. There's a little bit of confusion over that because we have a total debt. There's a supply system, now called Energy Northwest debt, and then our federal debt. And the federal debt is structured to lay on top of the Energy Northwest debt. So when the supply system Energy Northwest debt went away, it was originally scheduled for 2013. The federal debt filled in for a couple of years. But in 2018, we did have a fall off in our debt structure, and so value would be there for ratepayers. We have been actually restructuring our debt, so the Energy Northwest debt is now going to be stretched out to 2018. But the key thing is the top line, the total debt, still begins to decline in 2018. So there is substantial benefit once we get to that point.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple quick and maybe one or two tough ones. There was a recent, there have been a series of GAO audits on salmon spending, and what is interesting to me is that the salmon spending from Bonneville Power Administration is approximately twice what people have been characterizing it. And I just wondered if there's some policy at Bonneville that will help us get a truthing on the dollars that we're actually spending on salmon mitigation from the agency. And do we have a handle on what it is that salmon restoration costs in terms of ratepayer dollars?
So I believe that, if my recollection is correct, that we submitted a letter that when those GRO reports come out, federal agencies have the opportunity to comment on them, and I believe that we did comment on that and describe our view of what the costs are to ratepayers from salmon restoration. There are some areas which are absolutely clear and some are areas of judgment. So when we spend dollars on habitat, hatchery, those kinds of things, it's real easy to do the accounting and track it, and we have all of that. And I believe that if that's not in that particular report as an attachment in our comments, we can provide it to you. There's a second area, which is we've modified hydro system operations to improve juvenile and adult passage at the dams. And the value of that is related to the market value of power. And you can get into lengthy debates about what the market value of power is. Safe to say there is at least some cost associated with that. And we have estimates, and again, I believe it's in our response to the GAO, and that people can debate that question, but I think there is little debate that there is at least some cost associated with that.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman, perhaps we could hear that other shoe drop. I think lots of us are aware of the first set of reports and may not have gotten the agency's answer to the audit, answer and response, so that would be helpful. Mr. Chairman, follow-up?
Yes.
The folks in the Mid-Columbia have been following the efforts of the aluminum industry to get restarted, and in the meantime, several have determined that they are not able to restart. There's still a couple up there that would, in at least the opinion of the operators, have viability, and they're still trying to get agreements with the Bonneville Power Administration to get guaranteed power to restart. Where are we on that? Is that coming, Mr. Chairman? Or?
So I presume you're probably most focused on Golden Northwest, because they have a variety of aluminum companies in very different financial situations across the region, so I'll focus my comments on Golden Northwest.
Thank you.
We have had numerous discussions with Golden Northwest about a number of issues. They currently owe us a substantial amount of money, and they are in difficult financial straits, and we are trying to figure out what we can do to... We would like to get paid, and I think they actually would like to pay us, but they don't have the money today to do so. So we're trying to figure out how we can work through that problem. The challenge, remember, Bonneville is a not-for-profit agency, and although we're a federal agency, we get no appropriated dollars. All of our money comes from power and transmission sales, mm-hmm. and so if one customer is not paying, another customer is paying for them. And so the challenge here is to try to work through this in a way that is a reasonable business proposition that doesn't increase financial risk for the rest of Bonneville's ratepayers. We have looked at a number of very creative ways of being able to resolve this problem. I can't tell you today that I'm certain that we will come to a conclusion that will be a positive conclusion between us, but I can tell you that we are having good discussions. But I need to tell you one other thing, which is I'm sure there are customer representatives sitting here in the room today for some of these other customers who are wondering whether they're going to take it in the shorts as a result of this decision. And what I've committed to all parties is before we would conclude any agreement, we'll go through a public process on what it is that we're talking about as a workout deal, in effect, for Golden Northwest.
Mr. Chairman, follow-up?
Sure.
But just a response to that comment, I encourage you in every possible way, and I hope that that is successful. And there is risk involved, no question, but I guarantee you that the net present worth of a closed aluminum plant isn't very great. Mm-hmm. So that not only the local jurisdictions that have those facilities on their tax rolls are concerned about this issue, and preference power customers that are at risk for the rate question, but a lot of workers, and that's 600 jobs that we would love to see contributing to the community. And I'm just hoping there's a way to work that out. And I will be very interested in that public process. Preference power, as long as we're on that topic. Very much in the news has been the possibility of a purchase of a major private utility by a major municipality and how that might affect preference power purchasing if that were to occur. What's the mechanism for balancing the interests of current preference power purchasers against the possibility of a brand new, very large preference power purchaser? And what does that do to your income stream?
So we have not addressed this question directly at this point. I will say that we know that if you look at the system, we're about an 8,000 megawatt system, and we're serving about 11,000 megawatts of load. And one of the if you look at our cost structure, we were about a $2 billion a year organization before October 1st, 2001, and we're about a $3 billion a year organization after that date. And the fundamental driver of that was prior to that date, we were not serving a significant amount of load beyond our resource base. And in fact, if you look at our cost structure, about 75 to 80% of that cost increase is due to the service to load, service to new load. So a concern for us is the amount of load that we will serve in the region. And one of the things that we would be concerned about is that's a huge load. The PGE load is a huge load. And if it were a preference customer, it would have rights under federal law to be served by the Bonneville Power Administration. Now, terms and conditions and notice periods and all of those kinds of things are open for discussion. But they would have some rights, and we would have to work through what those rights are. The impact on other preference customers, if we had to serve that load, we'd have to figure out what the cost would be of purchasing power in the open market and what the cost then would be of melding that in with our existing resource base. Safe to say, if we were adding a lot of load to our system, it would increase our rates. And I think that's a simple conclusion. How much depends on what the market price is and how much load there is. And again, we have done no studies of that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that's the question is whether or not there might be a huge cost shift to current preference power purchasers, and that's a grave concern to the current structure of public power purchasers and preference purchasers.
If I can make one more comment, another critical question is the amount of load that would come to Bonneville. Again, there are existing resources that serve that load today. And what happens to those existing resources? That's probably the critical question for us with respect to how much load we would have an obligation to then serve.
Mr. Chairman, another question.
Yes, Senator
Perry. I think we all were just shocked and amazed by the mechanism in deregulation that sucked so much capacity and power out of our system and put it into the marketplace and caused a lot of cost shifting back to Bonneville. And that was directly connected to the deregulation issue. I think most ratepayers just want some clear assurance that such a system or such a rapid increase in the cost and transfer of our capacity simply won't happen again. And I also would like to hear a comment on the fact that Bonneville's role is changing so rapidly. At one point in time, it was a generator and distribution market maker, and you know, probably the premier organization in the country for generation and distribution. Now you're in brokerage. You are buying and selling power at an unprecedented rate, and that's got people concerned as well. So I guess I just want to hear an assurance that another meltdown like we saw with the energy deregulation debacle in California will not and cannot happen. That if there is a strategy to recover any of the costs that were transferred, I'd love to hear about that. And what about your new role as a major broker in the energy markets?
Well, so you just set us off on
nothing
an hour-long conversation.
Nothing like one question at a time.
I perceive, Mr. Chairman, you're losing patience with the number of my questions.
No, not a problem.
Almost hard to know where to start with that one. A couple things. First, I would love to be able to give you an assurance that what happened in 2001 won't happen again. I cannot give you that assurance. We have embarked as a country on creating competition at the wholesale level with the National Energy Policy Act of 1992. And that has led us down this path in which we are depending more on markets, and markets are by nature volatile. Now, the type of volatility that was experienced in 2001 in the electricity markets, from what I can tell, is nearly unprecedented relative to other types of markets. And so I do think that there are things we can do that can minimize price volatility. Number one is try to make sure that we have sound electricity infrastructure. Again, I do believe that there was manipulation of the market. People have admitted that they manipulated the market. I don't believe you can manipulate a market if you don't have a fundamental supply and demand problem. So that's why my point number two here, what we do to set up an infrastructure that will ensure that we have supply and demand in balance, is probably the best thing that we can do as policymakers to limit the exposure to price volatility. With respect to our opportunities to try to recoup some of those losses, there are a number of parties out there pursuing refunds. We have been not aggressive in that area, mostly because we made a bunch of decisions that try to keep us out of the wholesale market in 2001. We bought down load. We paid aluminum companies not to operate, do those kinds of things. We chose a different strategy than others did who chose to purchase power and are now seeking refunds from those that they purchased power from. So we have a limited ability to recoup on our system because of the particular strategy that we chose. We believe it was the best strategy at time. It was the least cost strategy. Having said that, it's limited our refundability on a going forward basis. Did I get to your question?
I think you probably covered them all, except the idea that Bonneville Power Administration's role has changed significantly from generation and distribution to purchase and resale as part of the mix.
Yeah, so that really is an important question, and it gets to the discussion about post-2006 and what our role is going to be. Again, we have an 8,000-megawatt system, and what we are currently doing is purchasing on the open market to serve 11,000 megawatts of load. I would say Bonneville has no inherent competitive advantage as a market purchaser. There's no particular reason why we serve that role better than anyone else in the region could serve that role. We have done it because there was a tremendous desire for this 8,000 megawatts, and there were only two ways to split up that benefit. One is, say there's only 8,000 megawatts and everybody's going to be limited in what they get. And the second way was, buy some more and then spread the benefit of the 8,000 megawatts across 11,000 megawatts of load.
Blending.
So the latter was the strategy that was chosen in 2000, and now we're proceeding with that. I have some reservations about pursuing that strategy on a long-term basis, and think that probably the most important thing for Bonneville to do is to be great stewards of the core assets that are out there, make sure that we're getting high value out of that 8,000 megawatts, and allowing the market to be able to decide how best to make decisions about serving load growth beyond that point. General philosophy that I have, we're going to walk into this discussion with post-2006 and talk about how we want to allocate these benefits, but I've signaled to a number of folks in the region that that's how I'm going to walk into that discussion.
Okay. Who all gets to weigh in on that thought process that you're talking about right now?
Oh, actually, anybody that wants to is allowed to walk into that process. It's a very open process. The key players tend to be we're a wholesaler, so it's the customers that we're selling to, investor-owned utilities, publicly-owned utilities, the aluminum companies. And then there are a number of stakeholders in the Bonneville system that are not customers, environmental interests probably being the most prominent of those, Native American tribes. And those folks are pretty active participants as well in trying to make sure that the way that we're setting the system up allows opportunity to be able to make sure that the cost that they believe should be incurred by the system can be recovered through rates.
Okay. Are there other questions? I have a question that I'd like to read that I had written down earlier, but I want to give opportunity to others. I wanted to ask about who manages the regional transmission system. You know, what is the role of federal government, especially the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, in managing the regional transmission system? How do we use our Northwest congressional delegation to work with FERC and the Department of Energy, especially on issues dealing with regional transmission system?
Well, in the Northwest, at least, you've got two federal entities to deal with, because we've got the Bonneville Power Administration sitting here owning 75% of the high voltage transmission. And so we have a set of statutes that we operate under, which really makes us different in some respects from other parts of the country, because nobody else has as large of a federal player sitting in the middle of the marketplace. And therefore, the other entities are generally regulated under the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission statutes, Federal Power Act, etc. With respect to our system, our system is operated as an open access system. We have, since 1994, tried to make sure that we provide open, non-discriminatory access to allow wholesale competitive markets to work. And we have tried to operate consistent with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission rules that apply to jurisdictional utilities. With us being a non-jurisdictional utility, we've still tried to comply with the same rules. There is a ongoing debate, a very vigorous debate in the region right now with respect to the proposal that's been articulated by FERC called Standard Market Design, trying to establish national policy for how wholesale markets should work. It starts with transmission, but it actually is bigger than transmission. It actually gets to power markets as well. We are pretty actively engaged in that discussion, and our view is that There can be some good things about the modifications of this transmission system. There's also the discussion of formation of regional transmission organizations where all of the transmission assets would be consolidated. It wouldn't just be 75% of the system that would be operated as one system. It would be the whole thing. And we believe there are some potential benefits to formation of an RTO, and there can be some potential benefits in some of the types of things that are being talked about in standard market design. However, there's some real downsides associated with this for the Northwest. We operate a very different system here, not just because you have a federal transmission system, but also we have a hydro system. And hydro systems are very, very different from thermal systems in one key way. And that is, on a hydro system, you all share the same fuel supply. You want to create competition amongst thermal systems, but you don't necessarily want to create competition on a hydro system, because that's not how you create the highest social value. The highest social value is through coordinated operations. When you have a hydro system, you do not want a dam operator upstream operating independently from a dam operator downstream. It just doesn't work in terms of creating maximum value. And so we have tried to articulate to at the national level this distinction between the Northwest system and other systems, and why there needs to be flexibility for regional differences. And I think I'm pleased to report to you that we've had some real success. I think FERC is showing some deference. We still have a ways to go in making sure that they understand how our system operates. But I think there is the potential for moving towards some modifications to the way we operate the system to capture values that can be there for Northwest citizens without necessarily adopting a one-size-fits-all federal policy.
Right. Senator Beyer.
With that, I'd like to hear your comments on complete regionalization, or, you know, takeover by the states of BPA. Obviously, that's been talked about by one of our members of the Northwest Power Planning Council quite vigorously, and I'd like to have your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I've had a number of conversations with Senator Durfler about that over the years, and I am a believer that these resources are the indigenous resources of the Northwest, and it is important for us to retain the value of these resources for Northwest citizens. And so we agree on that point. I have been more reluctant to come to the conclusion that the best way to preserve the value is through a regional buyout, mostly because this is a system that is built with 60 years of history and lots of legislative history, and the roots are pretty deep on this tree at this point. And seeking to uproot this tree and replant it as a interstate compact would be an extremely difficult complex, extremely difficult to put in place. And it's not clear to me, given the amount of time and brain power that would take of the region's electricity cognoscenti, that it would produce a commensurate amount of value. There is an alternative way of capturing that value, and it's through long-term contracts that would preserve the value through a contractual mechanism. And that's the path that I've been more interested in and been encouraging of parties to pursue over the course of the last couple of years. And so we are still looking at that. That's, I have to admit that's been held a little bit in abeyance because of our near-term financial crisis. But my hope is that we're going to get back to this fairly quickly and find some ways to be able to preserve the benefits through a long-term contractual mechanism.
long-term contracts still have a life. I mean, maybe long-term. Does that retain or maintain the benefit as securely as you feel is... I mean, is that okay? I'm just wrestling with it. I'm not an expert here, okay?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's, I think that's one of the issues, probably as you talk to legislators from several different states, you know, that we don't spend our life swimming in this arena, and so we don't understand it that well. But that question just popped into my head. Is that really as secure?
It's not as secure. However, it does avoid some of the fairly significant problems. First, the legislative hurdle of walking through the Congress and working out the terms for a purchase. And remember that this is a system that does use a lot of capital. And so we would have to find a way to create access to capital. And there would be questions about the relationship of this entity to the states, et cetera, and what... So we are a federal agency. We have a fair amount of advantage in terms of when we do get capital, it comes at fairly good rates. So there are some very difficult trade-offs here. And again, having walked through and thought about these problems for a couple of years, my advice and my view in terms of our position is that the best way to manage those trade-offs is through a long-term contract.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair?
Senator Nelson, along the line, what is the danger of a federal buyout or that's always floating out there? Somebody else is going to come in and buy out our system?
There are a variety of threats to the Northwest system and the way value can be extracted from the system. And those come in the form of a buyout or just an increase in the amount of money that's sent to the Treasury, repayment, the annual repayments that we make. And I think the my view of this is that the there was a period at which there was a significant threat to the system. Bonneville didn't make its annual Treasury payments in the late 70s and early 80s. And from about 85 to 95, we were at fairly... We seemed like we were constantly confronting challenges and ways of extracting more value and sending it off to the federal Treasury. That threat dissipated some in the late 90s. And my personal view is there is almost a direct cause and effect relationship between the size of federal deficits or surpluses and the amount of threat that we face. And so we've gone through a period of large federal surpluses, and now we're back into a period of large federal deficits and huge federal deficits. And I spent 10 years of my life working in D.C. for Bonneville, and I can tell you that there are folks there at the Congressional Budget Office and other places whose job it is, when there are large budget deficits, to go through the budgets line item by line item and figure out how you can get more money out of something and not call it a tax increase. And government enterprises tend to be a focal point of those kinds of discussions. So my sense is that we're headed towards a period in which we'll face more of those challenges.
Senator Messerly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize. You might have covered this earlier, Mr. Wright, before I was able to get here. But I'm curious if I'd like to hear your comments on our future capacity and future needs in the Northwest beyond. I think I heard you talk about 2006 or those areas, but longer range, how we're going to meet the needs of the Northwest, both in terms of generation and in terms of transportation, transmission, I mean. It seems to me like we're really going to be challenged to be competitive with within our region as well as within the regions of the United States.
You know, I want to say thanks for that question, because I actually think that that is the most important question. It's the supply and demand picture which drives everything relative to rates, reliability, and the things that are important to us in electricity infrastructure. A couple of years ago, the Northwest Power Planning Council, which I do believe is one of the premier planning electricity organizations in the country, if not the world, told us as a region that we were about 3,000 megawatts short by 2003. And my view is that their predictions came true, and it is at least a portion of the cause of the 2001 West Coast energy crisis. Coming out of the West Coast energy crisis, we have seen a substantial increase in the amount of megawatts being generated in the Northwest. We have close to 2,000 megawatts of new generation that has not only been sited and licensed, but has been built and is actually producing megawatt hours in the system today. So we have made some progress towards solving that problem. What we don't know about that 2,000 megawatts is whether it's going to be dedicated to Northwest Load or not. This is the brave new world of restructuring. When you have wholesale merchant generators, they go wherever they think they can get the best price. So there is generation in the Northwest. Whether it will be dedicated to Northwest Load or not remains an open question. The second key thing that's changed since the council put out that report is in 99 and 2000, and for many years prior to that, there was about 3,000 megawatts of aluminum load operating in this region, and that is a huge amount of power. I cannot understate how much power that is. Today, there's less than 500 megawatts operating. So we've had a 2,000 megawatt increase in generation, a 2,500 megawatt decrease in load. We also have some other loads that are off because the economy is off, but that will come back. What is unclear to us today is how much of that aluminum load is going to come back. We have higher priced electricity than we did before in the Northwest, and aluminum prices have been very low the last couple of years, and there is a huge amount of capacity, aluminum capacity, that has been added around the world. Consequently, as we look forward in the supply-demand picture, the first question you have to ask yourself is how much more do we need in the next few years? And it's not as clear as it was a couple of years ago that we need a lot. We will eventually need more. We just don't know whether it's the next couple of years or whether it's more like 5 to 10 years down the road. And we need to get more clear about what's going to happen with this existing generation and what's going to happen with aluminum loads. Beyond that point, my personal view is that we still have a choice as to which direction we want to go, whether we want to count on merchant generators or whether we're going to count on the old regulated utility to make investments on behalf of ratepayers and be able to collect a regulated rate of return. This state, from my perspective, has sort of gone half and half with restructuring, opening up industrial and large commercial loads and leaving residential and small farm loads into the realm, still the regulated realm. Across this region, the states have done very different things. Montana has completely deregulated. Idaho and Washington have said, we're not going to touch deregulation with a 10-foot pole. And one of the difficulties for us is we're trying to deal with a hybrid system where retail is being served in very different ways across this region. It looks like it's going to stay that way for a number of years. So my assumption is that we are going to use a hybrid to develop new generation. Some regulated rates, some merchant generation, and we are going to have to build a transmission system and transmission policies that can accommodate either.
Thank you.
Fascinating. I kept wanting to ask, how's it going in Idaho, when you just commented on the completely deregulated system? You don't have to make comments if you don't want to, but how do you assess each of those decisions that were made in states, realizing that you're federal and you don't want to maybe comment, but it doesn't stop me from asking.
Yeah. I would say right now all of the states are suffering from the results of 2001, the combination of the drought, the West Coast energy crisis, and the 2003 drought. I mean, this is a real drought as well. And 60% of the region's electric power is hydro resources. So when we have a drought across this region, everybody gets hit by it. So everybody's getting hit by rate increases. What I tend to see right now is somewhat of a stepping back, though, from moving forward with deregulation, and that's why I believe that we're going to be in a state of hybrid nature for the next few years, because I don't see anybody being anxious to move forward very aggressively at this point. Nor do I see when I look at Montana or Oregon, do I see people stepping back from where we are. We're going to kind of stick with where we are for a while here and figure out whether we can make it work is my assumption.
That's right. You rattled that off so fast and I won't track. It's Montana that completely deregulated.
Montana went all the way. Okay. Yes. Idaho that has chosen not to change anything so far.
Yeah, right. I guess I'm not surprised.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, circumstances are what they are, and certainly this is not just a situation that's attached with Bonneville Power Administration, but again, we see a situation where Northwest producers are disrupted by conditions, market conditions or global disruptions in markets related to conflict. We interrupt production in the local industrial base. By conscious choice to do that. All things in balance, we make those decisions. What that does is displace demand offshore, and then we witness an increase in capacity offshore to meet that demand. And then we engage in an argument about whether or not we should enter a market that's already overserved by world capacity. And this sort of comes home again. You know, we had a good, excellent industrial capacity in the form of the local aluminum producers. As a matter of fact, they wouldn't have located here if it wasn't public policy to put them here. And we put them here to take care of excess capacity that was being produced in a very low-density populated region that had very high hydroelectric capacity without much connectivity to the rest of the power grids in the U.S. So it made sense to not only put the hydro facilities here, but to put the aluminum plants nearby. We get into a situation where we make conscious decisions about who should be preference power purchasers and who should be interruptible power purchasers and cut off the aluminum industry. That displaced demand goes offshore to other places. The capacity increases in the offshore capacity to fill world markets, and then we engage in a debate about whether or not we can afford to restart the industries that we originally had here. This isn't happening just in the aluminum sector. It seems to be happening in agriculture, in all the manufacturing sectors, and I'm just hoping at some point in time policymakers will stop and think that their decisions to offshore capacity resonate for generations ahead of us.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Nils.
Just one more question. I mean, the Columbia is a huge asset. I don't think, we realize capacity, but I'd like you to put this in perspective if you possibly could. I've heard like there's more water that goes down the Columbia, twice the amount that goes down the Nile River, 10 times the amount that goes down Colorado River. 200 million acres, and we're always constantly being said there's not enough water in the river. But from my viewpoint, even in these down years, is there some way you could put in perspective, you know, what is 100 million acre feet or 200 million acre feet so that we have some sense of what a huge amount of water actually comes down that drainage?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I can't give you the comparison to the Colorado or the Nile. What I can tell you is if you visit Grand Coulee, and I hope all of you have the opportunity to visit Grand Coulee because it is a tremendous achievement to build a project of that magnitude, that there are three powerhouses there. The third powerhouse was the newest, built in 1964. It has six penstocks. One of those penstocks alone will carry the entire flow of the Colorado River. And so just to give you a sense of the magnitude here, that one 600 megawatt unit is so it's one 600 megawatt unit out of I think 6,000 megawatts of capacity at that dam. So it's there's tremendous potential on this river.
The other comparison I've heard is that we would be able to cover the whole state of Oregon with 3 feet of water. The whole state of Oregon.
I have to admit that I've never done that calculation before.
There's a lot of water coming down there.
Well,
there's a lot of demand for uses. You know, we should be able to work this whole thing out.
I guess my question, it arises out of Senator Nelson's comments. So it's not so much how deep you can cover the state in water, but how much difference does, say, diverting 1% out of the system for other purposes affect capacity to generate? You know, so I just picked 1% because I've been out there and watched the river, and that looks like it's huge, and I know that Washington gets more than Oregon, for instance, in terms of irrigation. If we try to match them, what effect does that have on generation and capacity for generation?
Well, it depends on where the 1% comes out. If it comes out of Montana, it hurts us a lot more than if it comes out below the Bonneville Pool. I think a way to answer that would be, so if you took 1% off of the capability of our system, which is what we'd be talking about, so it says 7,000 megawatts of hydro generation, so 1% would be 70 megawatts. 70 megawatts times the value in the marketplace of $40 a megawatt hour. Give me a second, I can probably do that. It's easily tens of millions, and it would be in the tens of millions, something like that.
A faster mathematical mind over here.
It's 28
million dollars. $28 million,
yeah. Okay, in terms of dollars. that's what it is in terms of generating capacity. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it'd be about 70. I mean, it'd be about 70 megawatts off of our system. So,
I just wanted to put that in context while we're talking about all the rest of this. I'm aware of the fact that you've been very generous with your time. Somebody told us you had 45 minutes, and somebody else said, "Well, maybe we can keep them an hour." And either way, you add it up, we're bumping up against the clock. Are there other questions? I want to thank you. This has been incredibly enlightening for me, and I'm sure other members of the committee. And our job, I hope, is to make the rest of the Senate at least aware of some of the issues that we face.
Great.
Comments? Anybody like to share any comments?
Just that, like you, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the expertise and the sharing and the openness and willing to discuss issues. And I don't think I've ever heard anyone in any public forum describe relative capacity of state legislators to handle an issue so gently but so clearly. I appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Again, this truly is a federal-state partnership that we have here, and so we appreciate the relationship. I've neglected to introduce Ann Morrow, who hopefully you have all met, and she is here because this is ultimately a federal-state partnership, and we are dedicating resources to maintain that partnership with you, so we want to work with you as closely as we can.
And we appreciate her and her input, and hope she'll just keep educating us along the way, and we can keep taking our concerns to her. Thank you. Before you run away, I want to tell everybody that Scott Corwin, the Vice President for Public Affairs and Marketing, Pacific Northwest Generating Cooperative, and Tom O'Connor, Executive Director of Oregon Municipal Electrical Utilities, are both here, and they were going to make a few comments as well. At least that's the way I understand it. So we want to thank you for your time, and I want to invite them both to come up to the dais as you leave us. Thank you again for coming today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Well, if that doesn't give you something to react to or think about or respond to, nothing will. I guess, Scott, I'll let you go first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you said, I'm with Pacific Northwest Generating Cooperative, but really here asked to talk on behalf of rural electric cooperatives generally, because we represent the power management and transmission management side of at the wholesale level for 8 of the co-ops here in Oregon. And just to give you an idea of what that means, we're intimately involved with most of the issues that Steve Wright just talked about, so I'm happy to answer any questions too. And for now, just leave my comments brief and just point out maybe a couple things that came up. For one, I'd like to underscore one thing Steve noted about Bonneville Power being a pass-through entity. This is not, and you'll see this when you take up, I think, at least some of you, Senate Memorial 3 talks about these threats from outside the region, or talking about privatizing portions of the entity or taking it to market rates. There's this perception in other parts of the country that there's this large federal subsidy through this federal agency, rather than the fact that these costs are all paid by ratepayers here in the region. And we represent a lot of those ratepayers, and a lot of them are in rural areas because that's the way the system grew up historically. We have here in Oregon about just over 100,000 accounts or customers for our cooperatives that we manage power for, and region-wide about 150,000. And in people, that means it's about 200,000 people here in Oregon. So one of the things when you talk about costs and rates of Bonneville, and I think Steve characterized a lot of the status of those issues correctly, there are trade-offs. We're certainly, I see Senator Ferrioli stepped out, but we're certainly concerned about the aspect of increased rates on jobs around the state. But at the same time, we are worried about those cost shifts. To the extent one customer isn't able to pay, others will pay, because this is a zero-sum entity, and the ratepayers will cover all the costs. And if they don't, there is big trouble with the federal government and missing a treasury payment. And just to give you a sense of that, so just 500 megawatts left, Steve mentioned, with respect to the aluminum companies. Well, our entire power we manage, and that's an average number Steve gave, our entire portion is just under 500 megawatts on an average basis for those 300,000 residents. So not to comment specifically on what the resolution should be going forward, although we've been working on proposals for on that long-term contract that Steve mentioned. But you should know that there are trade-offs within the region. Tom and I agreed to sort of split up the issues, and so I'd be happy to answer questions on any of those issues, including the transmission issues or others. But as far as where the customers have been pushing Bonneville into the future, for as far as what they should do into the future, I'll let Tom elaborate a little bit more on that, and I just say we would urge that the region try to center around refocusing on those future issues for what we're going to do with the Bonneville system post 2006 when some of their contracts are up, because some of these short-term issues that Steve just went through now are impacted by the fact that they are over-allocated right now. And that going forward, we need to settle some of those issues, and we also need to settle some of the internal issues with cost control at Bonneville that have concerned customers as they've seen their rates go up over the last 2 years. And those rates have gone up significantly, around 50% at the wholesale level. Passed through to retail customers, it's been in the 15 to 30% range, which is significant to this economy. If customers are going to enter into long-term contracts, they're going to want to see some resolution of those issues that gives them assurance to enter into those contracts. So thank you very much for having me here today, and I'll cede the floor.
Tom?
Mr. Chair, for the record, Tom O'Connor with Oregon Municipal Electric Utilities. I'll keep it short. I think Steve and Scott both made the important point that this is the Federal Columbia River Hydro System is an incredible resource for the Northwest and is critical to the economic viability of our state and particularly to the small communities in Oregon. Just as an example, for my municipal utility folks, almost 85% of our electric utility budgets is power purchases. And we purchase almost all our power from the Bonneville Power Administration. We are nonprofit entities. Therefore, anything that happens on the Bonneville system affects our consumers, our industries, our commercial and residential customers right off the bat. The situation that occurred with the California debacle and the drought, as you well know, there was a 46% rate increase from Bonneville, and that meant significant retail rate increases to our folks. So it's a tremendous asset. It has a tremendous influence on our communities. We are very focused on, as well as the short term, on the long term, as Scott mentioned, on determining what those contracts for post 2006 are going to look like, both for the small utilities and the larger utilities, the aluminum companies as well, and at the same time to try to meet our environmental and conservation needs. I'm not going to try to go into that in detail, but it is a major issue for us, and we agree with Steve that looking at setting up a series of long-term contracts for post 2006, 10, 20-year contracts, allocating the system in an equitable fashion is probably the best way to go to assure that we retain this asset for our Northwest folks.
questions?
Just have a quick one.
On aggregation.
Not aggravation, aggregation. well, that was the buzzwords around here. You know, the part of the thing is that we're going to be able to aggregate power. But I'm visiting your place of business, Scott. The thing that struck me was that that's a very complex business. And just the ordinary group of individuals, like schools or hospitals, will have a very difficult time aggregating power purchases unless they go through somebody like your group. Is there any truth to that? Or
well, it is a complex business. There's certainly a lot of truth to that. I think there are a lot of entities that could theoretically aggregate loads. They can do it through associations and others. They need at some point to have expertise to give them advice on how to get to market and how best to aggregate those loads and how to approach the issue. We're a little unique in the not-for-profit cooperative and public power world because our folks have been aggregating for a long time. We were the first co-op in the country to get a FERC power marketing license because our members wanted to aggregate at the wholesale level. At the retail level here in Oregon, I think there is potential if we can get to that next step where a more fluid market is created and where there's more stability in the system. And because of that, PNGC, just to have our nose, you know, slightly under the tent, we actually filed as an energy aggregator under the Oregon law. Now, obviously, that, you know, it hasn't developed in a broad-scale sense yet. But folks think because of some of those changes at the wholesale level since 1992 that it's coming at some point. And so, it's complex, but not out of the realm of possibility if you get somebody to give you that expertise.
Just one other quick question.
Senator,
prior to 1992, there wasn't a futures market in electricity. Now there's a futures market. You're just a commodity like wheat, everything else. Is that right?
I'd
subject to some risk.
Yeah. If we were a commodity like wheat, you probably wouldn't have seen that the wholesale costs go up 1,000% in 2001 within a couple of weeks. Unfortunately, energy, that's right. Philosophically, some folks would want to assert that, but especially in the Northwest where we're hydro-dependent, where we have transmission constraints, where we have ability to store a little bit of power in the form of reservoirs, but really nothing near like you can store other commodities and move other commodities. And so obviously energy has raised a lot of complexities that the country is still dealing with and has been since 92. And in fact, this week in Washington, D.C., the House Subcommittee on Energy and Air Quality in the U.S. House marked up a bill to try to address those issues and keep pushing the ball forward on market restructuring, and the Senate's likely to do the same thing in a couple of weeks. So it's still evolving.
Does your group use the futures market to protect your risk?
We have entered into some hedges in the past, certainly, and we buy forward to minimize risk.
I have one question, and I don't know if this is one that you want to answer, can't answer, shouldn't answer, whatever, but earlier Senator Farioli was very politically correct in talking about preference power purchasing and somewhat worrying about a new preference power purchaser entering the market or getting the power from Bonneville or having access to it. When Steve answered, he was much more direct and referred to PGE. Recognizing they have other sources, a couple things that would occur to me. You talked about the fact that you have some 300,000 customers and what you would be grabbing using 500 megawatts and so on. What's PGE look like with all of its other, you know, sources of power? What's its impact going to be from your perspective if that happened to go forward?
Well, Tom and I might differ slightly on our answer, so I'd let...
Yeah,
I
might.
But I'd be happy to... I guess from the, I think the co-ops in general, it's accurate to say, and you can check with Sandy Flicker, certainly for ORECA, who's in the room, and Roger Martin represents a couple too. But they have not taken a specific position on proposals to change the ownership of PGE. But as far as the wholesale power, just to look at it factually, and the PGE reps could give you a much more accurate answer on what their plans are for the future, but you know, historically they've covered about 50% of their loads through their own resources, and certainly could cover more in the future. For us, the question is one that Steve Wright raised, which is the federal system is defined right now, and it's not likely to grow. In fact, it's been shrinking. Since the Endangered Species Act listings in the early 90s, it's shrunk about 1,000 average megawatts of hydropower to meet those fish constraints. If you divvy up the pie and you have more folks wanting access to the pie, then everyone's going to pay more as Bonneville goes to the market to cover those needs. So that's just a fact. The specific transaction that you're describing has so many other facets to it, though. That
I realize that makes it almost an unfair question.
Yeah,
I was just interested, Tom. Mm-hmm. You,
Mr. Chair, I think I'd break it into two parts. One would be prior to 2006, under the existing contracts, were PGE to become a public entity and look to Bonneville to provide X amount of resources depending on how much they brought to the table themselves, the existing contracts would call for that power to be purchased on the market, and they would pay a market, whatever the market rate was for that power. It would not be melded with the other customers. The question really arises after 2006 and ties back, I think, to some of the other issues that Steve was mentioning, and I think it's real important to put it in that context. Post 2006, we do need new contracts with Bonneville, and at that point we need to make some we need to be making some decisions about how we're going to serve the economic and needs of the of existing businesses and residences and residential customers in the Northwest and future load growth. The customer proposal that you've heard referred to, which is a effort of the private utilities, the publicly owned utilities, and some of the industrial groups to come up with a structure to do that, involves both a taking that existing federal system, allocating in some cases a so-called slice of the system to the utilities, and then beyond that slice, each utility or each community is going to be responsible for meeting their own growth rather than looking to the federal system to impose that risk on it. There are some provisions also in that for the very small communities. My folks, certainly I would say most of the public power communities in Oregon, are not going to be on the in the market or building huge generating facilities. We will continue to look to Bonneville for our future resources in all probability. But that structure will impact what's the future for as long as 10 to 20 years. And in that context, I think you have to put the whatever happens with PGE and the metro area and beyond, and how you allocate that power. There's no simple answer.
Senator Farrell.
Mr. Chairman, it may come down to the relative confidence Oregonians have in urban-rural partnership.
Mr. Chair, Senator Farrioli, I think absolutely. I mean, there could be negative influences of this. There could be some extremely positive influences in terms of partnership, in terms of resources that are out there that we could put together.
Mr. Chairman, I'm called away to another meeting.
Yes, we need to be adjourning.
Adjourn the subcommittee of the Water and Land.
At least you adjourned yourself.
I often find myself adjourning myself.
Did you have another quick comment?
Oh, I would just say, just to add on, thank you, Mr. Chair, just to add on to Tom's last comment. In that, at least in the original agreement among customers on what should happen for the next 20 years after 2006, they agreed that Bonneville, like Tom said, should be really limited on what it augments the system, and only had in there 75 average megawatts that Bonneville would be able to go out and augment to serve new customers. And the idea there is you don't want this huge footprint in the market. Other folks can make their other resource decisions. And obviously 75 megawatts wouldn't go very far if you had a large municipality going in that public.
Right.
So.
Right. Well, listen, I want to commend my own committee. We still have a quorum here. I want to thank you gentlemen.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I just was concerned, and you partially answered the question about the 2006 and the ending of the contracts. What do you anticipate they're going to be looking at, or is it too early to start anticipating what you might have to do in the way of increased expensive contracts?
Well, thank you, Senator. I would let Tom add, too. I would say it's not too early. In fact, for some folks, it's getting pretty late, and we need to move quickly on that. And that's why it was of concern to most of the customers that Bonneville had to delay that process to look at this short-term financial problem that they have and whether they're going to increase rates now, because there's a lot of questions people have about what they're going to line up for resources coming out of that process post 2006, and as was mentioned earlier, there's a lot of other marketers and other pieces of generation that could be part of that mix, and folks need answers sooner rather than later. It takes a long time to get those contracts negotiated, and if you're going to build a resource, obviously it takes several years to go through that process.
One further.
Yes, Senator Fisher.
What's your opinion as far as the production of aluminum? I understand some of the aluminum companies are considering bankruptcy or closing down completely. Do you anticipate that they'll ever return to the capacity that we once had in aluminum production here in the Northwest?
You want to take that one?
Mr. Chair, I shouldn't speak for the aluminum industry. I suppose in the context that they are hit with a double whammy. The market price for aluminum is way down. It's much cheaper to produce in other parts of the country. At the same time, I think we've seen the end in the Northwest of ultra low cost power, regardless of how you allocate it out, and those pressures are going to continue, I think. Again, I'd emphasize this, as Steve Wright mentioned it, if you make a policy decision that you're going to shift money to support one type of industry in one part of the state, in the Northwest Power System, that will mean that a mill in Bandon or Weyerhaeuser somewhere else in the state or Cascade Steel in McMinnville, those folks feel the cost increases associated with that. So it's a tough situation.
Yeah. And Senator, I'd just say it's hard to see them getting to directly to your question. It's hard to see them getting back to the same level that they had been, but it also depends on the company. Some have already filed bankruptcy. Others maintain that they're ready. The plants are still there, and they're ready to get more pot lines going if they can structure a deal that works for them. But it's extremely energy intensive. As Steve Wright said, at 1,500 average megawatts they were selling in this rate period originally to a handful of companies. So.
Again, gentlemen, I want to thank you for your time this morning. This is going to be an ongoing debate. Our committee does have Senate Memorial 3 now,
yes.
So we'll be dealing with that very soon. And with that, I'd like to adjourn the Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources.